It's All About Food with Karen Hartglass, Wednesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
Glass, you're listening to It's All About Food. Thank you for joining me today, and I'm really looking forward to this one because I've got a couple of people that are going to be on today that are people that I really enjoy talking to, so I hope you're going to enjoy listening. It's going to be fun for me. The first thing that I want to talk about is how important it is to get our lives started on the right path. And parents that are raising children, what a great gift you give to your children when you teach them about healthy foods early on. So many people struggle as adults with weight and bad food habits, and some of them succeed in changing them and getting on a healthy path, but how much better would it be if we didn't start out with problems and we started out with good, healthy food habits? So we're going to hear a little bit about that from my first guest, Barbara Cole Gates. She's the director of Lean and Green Kids. She's the mother of two smart and spirited teens, Jack and Lucy. She has a BFA from San Diego State University in drama acting and works as a professional actress from time to time in Southern California. And she has been working to teach kids about healthier food since her son entered kindergarten. Jack is a junior in high school now. Lean and Green Kids is a website that can be found at leanandgreenkids.org, all spelled out. Welcome to It's All About Food, Barbara.
Hi, Karen. It's been a long, long time.
I know. You know, I just feel like you're an old friend.
I consider that a privilege.
You know, we did a little work together. It didn't take up much time, but there was a really profound connection that I had because I really admire the work that you do.
Well, you know, you bring up a good point. We didn't work that hard. But we accomplished something really amazing, and if I leave, like some of your listeners, with anything, or with one thought, it would be that the saying that, you know, small steps create big changes is pretty true, and it always seems daunting and overwhelming to try to make change, but I just, like, for us, I wanted to pass this resolution in California. I had no clue what I was doing. I was a stay-at-home mom working out of the playroom. And thanks to the Internet, I put out an email, and people forwarded it and said, would anybody like to join me in Sacramento to try and get this resolution passed? And you came.
It was
you
funny.
And two other dynamic women. And it took one day of hanging out with cool chicks. and we got a resolution passed.
Yeah, it was interesting.
Okay, it was a little more than that.
I'm living in New York, and I was in New York at the time, but I was doing a lot of traveling to California, and I just liked what you were doing and knew that I was going to be nearby, so I thought, okay, I'll learn something in the process. And more people need to do this sort of thing, lobbying and going to talk to your representatives. And we discovered it was not that easy, and there weren't many people that wanted to talk, but some did, and we got some good responses, and it takes a little courage, but more people need to do it.
And a little sense of adventure,
mm-hmm.
You know, and a willingness to have them say no. So
yeah.
What? You know, you're just... You're no worse off than where you started.
Well, I think maybe a background in theater and performing arts kind of helps with rejection because there's so many opportunities when you put yourself out there for auditions. I know that personally. You know, you get a few and they're great, but there are many that you don't, and you just move on.
It's not a coincidence that you would say that, because I say that to myself all the time. I think the rejection from pursuing a career in acting has sort of conditioned me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you just I really believe in the idea of never giving up. One of the things I know that trying to change school lunches and the way our children are fed and consume is it's a huge undertaking.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so many different avenues to approach it. But I discovered when I was reenacting one of the original suffragists who was working for the women's right to vote, and it took over 100 years for women to get the right to vote, and some of the women who started the movement never saw the day.
Yep.
And we look back and we think, well, it was just, how could that ever have even been the situation? And I think someday we'll look back and when whole plant-based meals are the norm, the normal way to eat, we'll look back and say, how could it ever have been any other way?
Yeah, there's a lot of that. And I take inspiration from that from time to time, because when I look and see at all the work that has to be done, sometimes I look back and say, well, all of this has already happened, and so we're moving forward. It seems like a long time in some perspectives, and in others it seems relatively short.
Yeah. I remember when I started this, when my son was in kindergarten, and he's a senior in high school now, and I called the Vegetarian Resource Group for some guidance, and he said, oh, we'll be talking in 5 years, you'll still be doing this.
Mm-hmm.
I had taken a break at that point. 5 years later, we had passed the resolution, and I had taken a break to resume raising my family. But now, 10 years later, I'm still at it, and I just say to myself, I really want to be part of the change, and I may not see it in this lifetime, but I can't do nothing.
Well, you're there for other people that are discovering things, and you're a great support for them, I imagine. But what have you seen change since you've started?
The perception that eating plant-based meals is whacked out.
Right.
It seems like I was just on a Martha Stewart website, and it was promoting more plant-based eating. And now we have Meatless Mondays that is endorsed or is in partnership with the John Bloomberg School of Health.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know I'm in California and you're in New York, so I think there's a big swath of the American population who still thinks it's pretty whacked out. But I don't know. I'm pretty sure that a lot of movements start in our progressive states.
Absolutely.
So,
there's been a lot of positive change. It's just not fast enough.
It's not fast enough. The reason, you know, when women needed the right to vote, it absolutely was a crisis for humanity, just as I believe gay people should have the right to get married. It's a civil rights what? Help me out here.
It's a
offense. It's a civil rights offense.
Mm-hmm.
But with our food crisis, one of the things that drives me is our planet is depending on it. Our children's future depends on it, and that's what drives me and feeds my passion, is I honestly want to help save their planet.
It's all life on Earth, period.
Yeah.
All life.
And people, and I still talk to educated, professional, esteemed human beings who I regard as highly intelligent. And I'll just simply say, now, are you aware that raising animals for protein causes more greenhouse gas than all transportation combined? And they say they had no idea.
Mm-hmm.
And I that's just unfathomable. So our goal with Lean and Green Kids is to not only teach kids about the healthiest food choices, but to instill in them that the healthiest food choices are good for them and they're the best choices for our planet. And animals and plants depend on that. And I think we engage them with current issues that they care about, so it makes the nutrition education that much more engaging for the kids.
Okay, tell me about Lean and Green Kids. What is it, and what do you do?
Well, Lean and Green Kids is a nonprofit 501c3 organization. I founded it. Well, you and I helped pass the resolution in 2003. I took a break, and in 2008, 5 years later, two things happened that sparked the reinvigoration of this effort on my part. One was, I had moved, and I was pursuing acting, and I am working part-time as a substitute school teacher, which I completely enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
But as an actress, as an artist, you have to ask yourself, okay, what else can I do that would bring me fulfillment? And the only other thing I can think of would be this mission of teaching kids about how to eat well and trying to change the way they're fed in the school lunch program. The other thing that happened, the other catalyst, so in addition to my soul searching, I also was realizing that in 2008, a report was due from the California Department of Education on programs in progress towards implementing the resolution that you and I passed, the Healthy School Lunch Resolution, that calls for daily plant-based vegetarian lunches to be served in school. Mm-hmm. With the same cycle of repeat as traditional meat-based and cheese-based entrees. So I called the Department of Education in 2008, as I'm starting to explore this idea of getting back to the mission, and they explained to me that the person that was assigned to write the report or to facilitate the report had been killed in a car crash, tragically.
Mm.
And they said, "We're so sorry, it just fell through the cracks."
Mm.
The next person it was assigned to retired a year later. The next person it was assigned to has taken up the cause, and I really trust that they want to work with Lean and Green Kids and work towards a positive change. And the exciting news is the report, it took since 2008, it's now 2012, and the report was just issued.
Mm.
And there's some exciting developments. I'm very encouraged.
Can we read that report somewhere?
Well, I have some highlights here that a friend who is researching this for me, a volunteer for Lean and Green Kids, has researched. I can read one of the things they're going to do is provide training for state and school district staff on vegetarian meal requirements, creative menu planning, and resources to provide vegetarian lunches.
Hmm.
This is a recommendation that they're making. They're also going to release a bulletin to all school districts, county offices of education, after school programs, and other relevant partners to identify resources, classes, webinars, websites, and technical assistance opportunities for providing vegetarian, vegan, and cultural school meals. So that's a mouthful. That's a lot
right.
to dig in. But
very good.
They're talking about validating it, promoting it, training, and I'm very excited. And they have reached out and said we'd like to work with Lean and Green Kids to really, you know, it's uncharted territory. So really to figure out strategies for the change.
Okay, so a lot of parents struggle with getting their kids to eat well. They think that they're offering the right things and their children don't want to eat them. And I'm not in all of these households. I don't know what's going on. But what are some of the things that enable children to eat better?
Well, now you're talking to me as a mom.
Yes.
Actually, when this all started, when I called the Vegetarian Resource Group, so many years ago, and they said, you'll still be doing this. they put me in touch with Dr. Antonia DeMoss,
uh-huh.
who has an incredible curriculum called Food is Elementary that she's gotten into over 1,000 schools. And so at the elementary school where my kids went, we instituted this cooking curriculum, this nutrition. It was a nutrition as well as a multicultural curriculum where kids cooked from around the world. So, and what we learned from that and what became so obvious is when kids are included in the preparation and they get to own what's going on, and experiment and explore with their hands and their smell and their touch, there was nothing that they didn't eat. Mm-hmm. And none of them rejected any of these very unusual foods that they were making. We made, we made soul stew. A lot of the stuff we did, we worked with greens. Everything was plant-based, so we worked with every different kind of bean. And the kids embraced it and loved it and devoured it. So I've always included my kids in the kitchen, and I'm really proud to say that they eat almost anything.
I'm always talking about people needing to find their kitchens and get back into the kitchen because we've gotten so far away from that. And it starts when we're young, and the benefits, there are just so many. And as you're saying, when children participate in the making of food, they're going to want to eat it.
You know what? Absolutely. So then that brings up the next dilemma. So few parents are making food, and I get
mm-hmm,
that
mm-hmm.
because when I had to go back to work, it's exhausting at the end of the day.
Yeah.
It's exhausting to make meals. And I'm not exactly sure what the answer is, except that all I can say is once I start, I get a second wind. It seems more daunting than it actually is,
mm-hmm.
and it's worth showing up for. As hard as sometimes it might seem, it's definitely worth showing up for. And usually you have great leftovers and great school lunches to pack up with the leftovers. And I want to say something else, though. I also was the kind of mom, I'm an old-fashioned mom, and I was the kind that, I know there's two schools of thought. There's the old school, which is me, which is you're going to finish your vegetables, or at least you're going to try your vegetables, and there are no other options. And then there's a newer philosophy where, you know, put them on the plate, let them pick up what they want. Their bodies and minds will tell them what they need.
Mm-hmm.
I have yet to buy into the newer
right.
philosophy. I'm old school, and you eat what is served to you. You at least eat, you know, try it. And I think if parents can discuss, you know, if you make it a discussion and you're really open with the kids and explain why it's so important and how it can save the planet and save lives, then they want to do the right thing. Kids want to do the right thing.
I agree with you. And I'm not sure if it's because I like to control things or a combination of things, but I think children need to be guided, and I've seen a lot of parents where they just empower their children so much, but they're not ready to make all of these choices. And
hallelujah.
They're not ready. I'm sorry, a six-year-old doesn't know what to make or eat for dinner.
But neither does a 46-year-old.
Yeah, well, because I didn't learn at six.
Right. And you're developing habits. That's the thing. It's hard. It's so hard as an adult to change. And if we develop bad habits at a young age, because yes, it takes more effort to chop vegetables. I mean, my mother came over and we were making a stew or a soup, and there were a lot of vegetables to cut. And she said, "My God, there's so much chopping."
Too much trouble.
This is real food.
Mm-hmm.
This is real food, and everyone should have a food processor. That'll make your life. That'll every mother. That was the greatest wedding gift I ever got, was my food processor. I didn't know it at the time.
A big food processor.
Yeah, and that does the chopping for you.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, the habits are learned young, and then if they are healthy eaters, what I've noticed with my kids is they take a lot of pride in that, and they don't have to change when they're older, when it's to the point where
it's hard.
A life or death.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can't agree with you enough. And I know that some people think they're trying not to give their children baggage or problems or stress related to food, because I guess they have memories of their parents saying, you know, you have to eat this. If you don't, you go to your room, or you don't get dessert. And there was so much, or eat everything on your plate because there are people starving in Europe, or whatever guilt trip was laid on us. There are some parents that consciously don't want to give their children any related baggage around food. And that's fine. But I also think, as we mentioned before, that children need guidance, and just making it a free-for-all, you know, what do you want for dinner?
You know what, Karen, you bring up a pretty big issue, though, because a lot of parents don't know.
Yeah.
They
say, what do you want for dinner, because they don't know what to make.
I'm sorry?
They say, what do you want for dinner, because they don't know what to make.
Yeah, and like my mother, you know, oh, my God, there's so much chopping. I've met a lot of moms who don't really know where to start, and So if our kids, you know, you can offer the healthiest food and you can educate the kids, but if it's not happening at home, it's not going to be as productive. And so, you know, I just encourage parents to really take this seriously. I want moms to know that the life they may save is their child's or their husband's.
Mm.
And I'm not a real old-fashioned gal. I consider myself a feminist. I consider myself a strong woman. But I do think that at the end of the day, it's, you know, hopefully it's a partnership in the kitchen, but the mom just kind of naturally takes the lead in a lot of situations, and that's not a bad thing. Mothers and women are nurturers, and we need to nurture our families. One of the best ways we can nurture our family is with food, and so moms really have a critical role in raising their children so that they can live long lives and also you know, kind of putting their foot down and with their husbands. I hear a lot of women say, "Well, a husband will never." And I think, you know, we have to make this, we have to fight for this, just like we had to fight for the right to vote, because the other life we might save is our husband's. And I know I want my husband to be around for a long, long time, and we've just got to take a stand. Us moms, it's time for us to take back the kitchen and take a stand, because we're talking about saving our children's lives.
And your own, everybody's.
And yeah, mm-hmm. And I can't think of anything that's more important for a mom to do.
So do you make any recommendations for ways to get started if you're clueless?
Well, we need to be informed. You know, I used to love getting Vegetarian Times. It felt like I was getting a gift in the mail. Every month I would get this pretty colorful magazine with brief articles and new recipes. And the recipes, some are vegetarian, some are vegan. But that certainly helped me. I think the attitude, you know, it's really important to have an attitude of a sense of adventure. That it really is a whole new world.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Garden of Eden. It's a return to Eden, and it's exciting. And I think if you can have that attitude about it, and maybe just incorporate one new recipe a week, just one.
Cool.
And also it's the art of substitution. Instead of meatballs in your spaghetti, you're going to put mushrooms and kidney beans. And instead of meat and cheese in your tacos, you can grow some veggies and throw some black beans in. So it's the art of substitution for a lot of traditional recipes.
I personally think it's really simple, but I can't speak objectively because I've been doing it almost forever, for my life, at least for 30 years. And it's just second nature. But, you know, I think especially for people that don't cook, it's challenging. For people that do cook and have that sense of adventure when they make food, I think they do better. But for those that are completely lost, yeah, it's challenging.
I guess I would just, I was completely, I mean, we all came to this at a young age and just were willing to experiment.
Yeah. And, you know, there, bless the Internet, there are, you can find a recipe for anything on the Internet. I have my own website, responsibilityandliving.com. My nonprofit, we're posting recipes all the time. And there's certainly, there's no lack there. And vegan cookbooks are exploding. There are so many great ones. So it just takes that little, I don't know, that little kick in the butt. Just do it.
Yeah, well, I think we need to think of it as saving lives and saving the planet,
mm-hmm.
and how important and what our role is as parents, how vital that is. I do want to say that Lean and Green Kids,
yes,
is not a vegan organization.
Okay,
I'm going to leave that up to the animal rights activists. Lean and Green Kids is a health and environmental organization, an eco health organization, and we just want people to embrace the idea of making more and eventually most of their meals plant-based so that that isn't something that's so foreign. And then if they decide to go all the way for the animals, that's even better.
Amen. Well, I think it's an approach that would welcome a lot of people more than something that said we only do it this way. So that's good.
Yeah.
You know, so many people just need to kind of peer into the crack in the door on the other side and see the world of fruits and vegetables, but they don't want to jump right in.
We have to, everybody needs to take it at the pace that's good for them. I would say that those parents who are pretty far along on the quest for better eating, because they understand that the plant-based eating and organic farming is so important. I really would like to inspire them or give a call to action that they get on their school district's wellness councils. A lot of people aren't aware that in the mid-2000s, a federal mandate was passed down that required all schools who are using the National School Lunch Program to create a wellness policy and a wellness council to implement the policy.
Mm.
So each school district, each public school, and many charter schools who are utilizing the USDA National School Lunch Program, they should have a wellness council, and parents really, really should be involved on this council advocating for better school lunches and a healthier school environment.
No, I didn't even know that that existed. I'm going to have to look into those.
Please do. And that's mostly how Lean and Green Kids is making forward headway, is by working with food service, you're working with teachers and administrators, and you have to be, you know, in with the people who are in charge of making these changes are. So, and they need parents. Wellness councils want and need parents, and they want and need community members. You don't have to be a parent. You don't even have to be a relative. But it's a forum of health professionals, educators, and community members who are invested. So I would just please, anyone who's listening, call your local school district, whether you have a child there or not, and find out when the next wellness council meeting is. And what they might find out is that the school district doesn't have a wellness council, because there hasn't been a leader to make it happen. But they're required to. So
well,
you need to, if your district doesn't have one, you can meet with the superintendent and say, hey, I want to be on the wellness council, and we need to get this reinstated because it's mandated by federal law.
Okay, just one last question before we go. I want to talk about your kids. How are they doing?
Oh my gosh. I say I'm going to knock on wood while we're talking, because honestly, I don't know if it's the food. I know that the food has a big part of it. They're academic stars.
Right.
And now I'm sounding like I'm bragging, but I just really, really believe in my heart that food is the foundation for a vital, happy, healthy, ethical life. And my kids are academic stars. They're very well adjusted socially. They're kind people, and they're athletes. They're star athletes. So the proof is in the pudding, and
absolutely, and
they started an animal rights club with the help of their mother, with the help of the experiences that I've had with Lean and Green Kids. I'm in a good place to kind of guide them in and being activists for a more compassionate world. And I can tell you they've already saved at least 3 lives, I believe, because they volunteer for the shelter, and 3 of their club members have adopted dogs and cats. So,
Barbara, thank you so much for joining me on It's All About Food. You're an inspiration to all moms and all people.
Thanks for helping us get the word out.
Yeah, leanandgreenkids.org. Okay, thank you. And I hope we get to see each other sometime, not in the next 10 years, but sooner. I'm Karen Hartglass. You've been listening to It's All About Food. We're going to take a quick break and be back with Dr. Milton Mills. Hello, I'm Karen Hartglass, and we're back with It's All About Food. Thank you for being with me this afternoon on a lovely February 22nd, 2012. And I want to bring on one of my favorite vegan doctors, Dr. Milton Mills. He's the Associate Director of Preventative Medicine with the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine and co-author of PCRM's report on racial and ethnic bias in the U.S. Dietary Guidelines. Dr. Mills serves as the race and nutrition specialist and board advisor for A Well-Fed World. Whether internist Dr. Mills is practicing at Fairfax Hospital in Virginia or at free clinics in Washington, D.C., his prescription for patients is likely to include some dietary advice. Go vegetarian. Medical research shows conclusively that a plant-based diet reduces chronic disease risk, so that's something I absolutely encourage my patients to move toward, says Dr. Mills, a graduate of Stanford University of Medicine. Dr. Mills doesn't limit his message to patients. He takes it to audiences around the country, as well as speaking at hospitals, churches, and community centers. Dr. Milton Mills, welcome to It's All About Food.
Well, thanks for having me.
Gosh, I've been wanting to talk to you on this show for many, many, many months and a couple of years. How are you today?
I'm good.
Good. I'm remembering the time we actually met, and it was when you were doing one of those wonderful good deeds here in New York City at a church. It was a weekend program on diabetes, I think, something like that.
That's correct, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm not exactly sure how we connected, but the person that was going to be doing the food demos for you got sick or something, and I came in to help you out, and it was really fun.
Yeah, it's good to talk to you again.
Yeah. So I'm frequently saying on this show that we need to rethink the way we feel about food. And I think you agree.
Yes, absolutely. The way I look at it, and the way I try to get people to conceptualize this, is that when most humans think about food, we think about it in a romantic sense. We think about it in terms of, you know, grandma and Thanksgiving and first dates and favorite meals, and we think about the romance of food, but we don't think about what food really is and what it's supposed to do. And quite frankly, one thing I want people to realize is that, you know, food is just a bunch of chemicals. And if I handed you, you know, a bottle of some sort of liquid chemical and said, drink this, first thing you'd ask me is, wait a minute, what is this going to do to me?
That's right.
And that's what we need to start realizing, that when we're putting food in our bodies, we're putting chemicals in our bodies. And these happen to be chemicals that ideally our bodies can derive energy and nutrients from, But those are the kinds of questions that we need to start to ask about the food we eat, because food is supposed to be a vehicle for energy and nutrients. And unfortunately, it now has become just sort of this pornographic escapade in self-indulgence,
yeah.
Where, you know, all we care about is what does it taste like, you know, how much fat and grease and calories and salt does it have. But we don't really ask, is this food I'm ingesting really delivering any nutrients to me? One of the most disturbing commercials that I see on TV now days is there's a commercial that comes on where kids are talking about how they don't like spinach, they don't like broccoli,
mm-hmm.
and then their mother pops up and says, "Oh, well, how about if I something to the effect of how about if I feed you some chicken nuggets?" Which, if you know anything about the way these so-called chicken nuggets are made, you know they're made from basically a paste that's collected from scraps in a slaughterhouse that's processed into these so-called nuggets that are then deep-fried in God knows what and then fed to children. I mean, they're absolutely nutritionally horrible things to be giving to kids.
So
the message almost is that, you know, if your child doesn't want to eat something nutritious, you can always, you know, feed them some chicken nuggets, and that's going to solve everything. And in fact, it solves nothing, but creates a whole host of different problems.
This is brilliant, and I hope to see a lot more on this concept. The whole idea that food is chemicals, because I think the first reaction most people would have is, what, chemicals? Because when we think about chemicals, we think that they're bad.
Right.
I don't always think they're bad. I studied chemical engineering. I know that there are good chemicals
yes,
and there are bad chemicals.
I was a chemistry major as well in college, so we're both kind of kindred chemistry geeks.
Yeah, but this is really brilliant, because a lot of people think that chemicals, if it's a chemical, it's toxic, and we don't realize that we are carbon-based, and everything we eat is carbon-based, which is a chemical, and water is oxygen and hydrogen,
right.
And we're breathing chemicals. Chemicals are good. Some of
right.
them.
Right. Well, and we do understand that some chemicals are good, and those are the chemicals that we call medicine. And
mm-hmm.
and so, you know, again, if I come and I say I have this wonderful medicine that's going to, you know, cure all your ills, people are like, ooh, I want some. Let me have it. Well, again, food is a bunch of – this is why food can potentially be curative and restorative for our bodies, because if we put the right kinds of chemicals into our bodies, i.e. the right kinds of foods, then, in fact, they can have a salutary effect on our health and a restorative effect on our health.
Okay, so how do people start rethinking the way they feel about food?
Well, the first thing is to, again, at some level, to step back and divorce yourself of the romance of it and say that, you know, number one, this is a bunch of chemicals. And when it comes to the amount of chemicals that we will ingest over a lifetime, nothing comes close to the amount of food, with the exception of water, which, again, is a chemical elixir of its own. But with respect to the amount of chemicals that we will ingest over our lifetime, nothing comes close to the amount of food that we're going to ingest over a lifetime. And given that fact, when you understand that, you realize that, wow, this really can have probably the most important impact on how well I live, how healthy I am, and how well my body will be able to fend off disease and continue, you know, hopefully functioning in a very healthful manner well into, you know, my advanced years. So I think we have to step back and realize, number one, food is a vehicle for nutrients. That's its number one purpose. So everything we eat, rather than sort of saying, well, you know, what do I feel like eating? What is it, you know, what do I feel like tasting? What does it taste like? We need to ask ourselves, what nutrients are in this plate of whatever I am planning to eat? And that requires a little bit of education about, well, what kind of nutrients should we be ingesting? And conversely, what kinds of food chemicals should we be avoiding? So I think that's kind of a first step, is to realize that, okay, I'm actually ingesting, you know, nutritive chemicals. So the question is, what nutritive chemicals, if any, will this food be giving me? And when you take that approach to it, there's no comparison to a bag of cheese puffs and a plate of broccoli.
Yeah, but I can hear people saying, but I like cheese puffs and I don't like broccoli.
And that's right. You're right. And you know what I say to them? Did you ask for those cheese puffs in the delivery room?
Mm.
No. Nobody asked for fried chicken, pork chops, cheese puffs, or ice cream in the delivery room. Everything that people believe they like, they had to learn to like. And just like we were taught to like or to desire things that may not be beneficial for us or healthy for us, we can learn to like things that are good for us. Because let's face it, I mean, this, what we're dealing with are, when you're talking about food, you're dealing with a kind of addictive behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And just as you would tell any addict, the issue is not whether or not you like it. If you're talking to someone who has a problem with alcohol or cocaine or heroin, of course they like it, but that's not the issue. The issue is, what is this stuff doing to you? And is it something that is going to be, that's allowing you to live a wholesome, healthy life? Or is this something that is actually tearing apart your body and ultimately going to cause your life to end too soon? And if the answer is the second answer, that it's in fact something that's destructive to your health, something that's going to end your life too soon, it doesn't matter that you have developed a desire for these things, you have to break that addiction and supplant it with something that is better for you. And the bottom line is, just like we learn to like stuff that's not good for us, we can learn to like things that are healthy and beneficial for us. You know, there's this really weird dynamic in American society, and it may even run through Western society to some extent, where there's this idea that things that are pleasurable or things that are fun are necessarily things that are either self-destructive or destructive to the environment.
And we're not
good for
us.
Yes, or not good for the planet. I mean, I see programs on how manatees are injured by boat propellers, or how the wilderness is being torn up by ATVs and snowmobiles, and you know, the first things out of people's mouths is that, well, you know, I have a right to have fun. Well, who says that in order to have fun, you have to do something destructive?
Yep.
You know, we've got to get rid of that idea, and we've got to embrace an ethic that where we understand that we can have fun, we can have, you know, derive pleasure from things that do not destroy our health, and in the larger sense, don't destroy the environment and don't hurt other creatures.
Well, personally, if I know that I'm damaging something, it's not going to be fun. Either.
Exactly.
But, you know, there are lots of different kinds of people out there. So do we all need to become dietitians or nutritional experts?
I don't think you need to be a nutritional expert, but you do need to educate yourself about what you're ingesting. It's just like if, you know, anybody who's going to get ready to go out and buy a computer or a refrigerator or a washing machine.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody understands that the first thing you need to do is not walk into the store and say, hey, I've got a pocket full of money, let me spend it. No. You need to read up on what it is that you need, that you want to buy, which brands are the best, what are the features they offer. You know, you need to educate yourself. This is something we this is a practice we readily embrace in other aspects of our lives. Let's stop pretending that when it comes to the things we eat, it's so hard, because it's not.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing more important than what we actually ingest, and then in turn, what we feed to our children. So we have to do the basic education to learn about the food that we eat, to find out what's important, what kind of nutrients we should be ingesting, what kind of things we need on a daily basis, and as I said, what kinds of things to avoid. Just like if I want to go out and buy a new refrigerator, I need to find out how much energy it uses, how much space it has inside, how energy efficient it is, and so on and so forth. So you don't have to become an expert, but yes, you do have to educate yourself a little bit. And fortunately, there are now a number of different websites and out there that can help you in this regard by providing this information. I mean, most of the legwork has been done. You just have to kind of go to these sites and read on these things so that you're more familiar with them.
This is good, Milton. This is good stuff. I think about that. It's funny how we decide what our priorities are.
Absolutely.
or sad, because I like to talk about organic food a lot and how I think it's important for so many reasons. And the first reaction is, but it's so expensive. And then what I usually do is look at their feet and see, you know, some really expensive running shoes that they're wearing.
Right.
You know, where are your priorities?
Precisely. And, you know, at least for me as a physician, one of the greatest ongoing tragedies that I see is that I will see people who will say, yeah, I know it's not good for me, but I like it or whatever. Okay, fine. It's bad enough that you're doing this to yourself. But you know what? In some respect, you don't have a right to do it to your children, because they come into this world as blank slates, and they look to us as adults and parents to teach them the things that they, you know, the skills and give them the knowledge that they need, that they'll need to basically navigate through this world and this life successfully. Why would you intentionally teach your children habits that you know are self-destructive, and teach them dietary habits that you know are going to place their health at risk? That's just not fair. Absolutely not fair.
People aren't thinking.
No, they're not.
They're just not thinking.
And we need to think. We need to start to think about these things and to realize that, you know what, if you're not going to do it for yourself, you've got to do it for your kids, because they deserve better.
Okay, now you work in a variety of places. As a physician, you do a lot of emergency room work?
Well, actually, critical care and work in the ICUs, yes.
Okay. And so what do you see? What kind of patients come in, and how does that make you feel?
Well, I see the business end of the American diet, meaning that I see people coming through the door with the heart attacks, with the end-stage kidney disease, with the end-stage liver disease, with the bodies that have been ravaged by a lifetime of ingesting the wrong kinds of chemicals and pursuing the wrong kinds of habits. And yes, of course, a lot of that is a significant portion is through drug use, but the vast majority is because people have spent their lives eating things that have been slowly tearing their bodies apart and tearing their bodies down. And over time, ultimately, their body begins to break down, and their organs begin to suffer permanent damage. And as a result, they end up having, you know, a heart attack, or as I said, and, you know, losing so much kidney function that they need to go on dialysis, and so forth. And the great tragedy of all this is that so much of this is avoidable and preventable.
What's amazing to me is how much crap the body can take, that how many decades
Absolutely.
It can take, abuse. That's just mind-boggling. And so what's inspiring there is as soon as you start treating your body better, it heals.
Well, that's true, and yes, you know, for, you know, every leaf has both an over and under side, and I was just 2 weeks ago I had been invited to the United States Census Bureau to speak to their they were having a heart healthy month, and they asked me to come and talk about heart health.
Mm.
And one of the things that one of the points that I made to the attendees at the lecture there was that every 21 days, our heart completely remakes itself.
Whoa.
And that's because, the heart works so hard. It pumps over doing your regular daily activities. I'm not talking running a marathon or doing anything special. Your heart's going to pump at least 2,000 gallons of blood a day. And 1 gallon of water weighs 8 pounds. Blood is actually slightly heavier because it has cells and all kinds of other stuff in it. But when you add that up, that's a couple of tons that your heart is doing every day, all day, nonstop, round the clock.
Without complaining.
Yes, a thankless job. Well, that's a lot of work. It's a lot of wear and tear. And so the heart has to continually replace its contractile proteins so that it can go on doing the work that it's being required to do. And so literally over a 21-day period, the heart completely remakes itself over and over and over again. And the beauty of that is that if you start today by eating a healthier diet, in 21 days you're going to end up with a healthier, stronger heart.
That's nice.
It is nice.
That's really nice. So do you tell some of these patients what they can do and what's their reaction?
Well, actually, you know, what's really interesting is that sick people are very willing to listen. When people are – now, you know, of course you have your knucklehead who, no matter what, I mean, they're just they don't seem to get it. But for the most part, when people suddenly realize that, oh, my gosh, I actually am mortal, and I just might die because I almost just did die,
mm-hmm.
they are generally – you know, willing to listen to what you have to say about trying to do things differently. The tragedy is that unfortunately, for a lot of people, it's simply too late. Meaning that they come in, you know, with such a severe heart attack that they suffer irreversible brain damage, or they don't get to the hospital in time, and their heart has suffered irreversible damage, and so they don't really have the option of trying to change their diet lifestyle to sort of, you know, take advantage of a healthier lifestyle. But for those who do have that option, a lot of them are willing to listen. Now, you know, everybody knows kind of nowadays, if you get a heart attack, first thing you do is you call 911, they whisk you off to the hospital, then they roll you into the cath lab, and they snake a catheter up through your arteries, and they find the blockage in those arteries, and they put a little metal wire cage in there to open up that, called a stent, to open up the blockage and restore blood flow to your damaged heart muscle.
And everything's
well,
better.
And the problem is that a lot of times people think, okay, I've been fixed.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, you haven't. Not really. And the analogy that I use is that if you had some vacation property and you had, you know, 50 acres of vacation property, and running through this 50 acres of vacation property, there were three streams. And the streams were beautiful streams, and there were trees and plants, and, you know, you'd go up and spend summers with your family and have a wonderful time, but you drove up one day and you find that, oh my gosh, a family of beavers had moved in and had dammed all three streams. And now your property is flooded and the trees are dying and everything's a mess. Well, the first thing that you would do is, you know, blow a hole in those dams, correct?
Mm-hmm.
To restore flow to those streams to relieve the flooding. Now, if you did that, would you say to yourself, my problem is solved? Everything's back to normal? No, because you still got beavers.
Mm-hmm.
And until you relocate those, I mean, obviously we don't want to kill the beavers.
No, we don't.
In this instance, we would relocate them. But the point is that if you don't do something to move those beavers to a different place, they're just going to dam that hole back up, and pretty soon your property's going to be flooded again. Likewise, when you have a heart attack, which is a blockage in one of the arteries supplying blood to your heart, when we go in and open up that artery, we have relieved the acute problem, the situation that places your life at risk, but we have not addressed the underlying disease, and that is the process that was blocking up those arteries. That problem is the things that we have been choosing to eat and the way we've been choosing to live. And until you address and change those issues, you really have not addressed the underlying disease process. And so it's not enough just to get a stent or bypass. You have got to change your diet and lifestyle so that you will not continue to develop new blockages or re-block those arteries that have been opened.
That's such an important thing, and I don't think a lot of people get that message when they go in and they get
don't.
A stent
that
and they just think,
true.
I'm good to go, and they should get, as part of the fixing or as part of the surgery, there should be a workshop in healthy eating.
Yes, there should be, and
yeah.
Unfortunately, the problem is that nobody wants to pay for it.
But we're seeing that the money that goes into nutrition training and helping people eat better actually saves money. But,
of course it does.
Yeah, we're out of time.
Of course it does.
So we're going to have to pick this up another time, but thank you, Dr. Mills. You are one of the best. Thanks for joining.
Do you mean to tell me we've gone through our time already?
Yeah. We're all done.
Wow, Karen.
But you're going to have to come back and talk.
That was too quick.
Yeah, I know. Well, you have a lot of important information to share. Dr. Milton Mills, one of my favorite doctors, thanks for joining me on It's All About Food.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah,
thanks.
Take care.
Thanks for having me.
Okay. Be well. I'm Karen Hartglass. You've been listening to It's All About Food. Thank you for joining me, and please visit my website, responsibleeatingandliving.com. We make healthy eating delicious and fun and easy and wonderful and whatever. Have a great week.